are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, as we close this series today, we're going to take a moment to celebrate the strides that have been made in OCD awareness and advocacy. From better treatments to greater visibility, progress has been made, but there's still more to do. And today we reflect on how far we've come and we look ahead with hope and determination. And we're joined once again by Dr. Jerry Bazadenhout from the Vista Clinic to guide us through this conversation one last time. Good morning, Doc. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Bongi. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you once again for making time. And we really appreciate you coming through this entire month and sharing with us so many things that we did not know about OCD, and we've got a better understanding. But let's close things off now by celebrating the progress that has been made in OCD awareness and advocacy. How do you think the conversation around OCD evolved in recent years?
Well, I think there's a tremendous awareness, I think, worldwide about the illness. Mm-hmm. I think prior to the 1950s, people sort of spiritualized it a lot. They linked it to behavior and to poor social social problems. Mm-hmm. And with the sort of bringing that kind of the understanding that it's an illness, it's taken it away from those realms and putting it into a treatable sort of realm where we can actually look at this as an entity and talk about it.
Yeah.
We've spoken about the trivializing of it, that in a way, it's a problem, but it's also a sign that people are aware of this illness.
Yes.
Not fully the extent of it, but, they're actually having a conversation with it about it. And I think that's very helpful. Mm. It's interesting when you go and read up on the history of OCD, it was already mentioned in the 1500s, 1600s, in churches where the priests would sort of see these people having these intrusive thoughts while having prayer. Mm-hmm. And they sort of link that purely back to demon possession or to sin.
Yeah.
And now we understand, but that's actually not the person. That's actually just part of an illness. And differentiating between the illness and the person, I think, is a big part of that conversation that is happening. And people can live with themselves easier because of that.
Yeah. Separating the illness from the person is definitely important.
Yeah. And that we don't, I can trust my own thoughts, but I don't have to trust the illness thoughts. Mm,
yeah.
So I think, there's a couple of international foundations that are working on awareness and getting help. Mm-hmm. And I think the internet has really made a big difference, hasn't it?
Okay.
It's made knowledge so widely available.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's, it's too much and it's now difficult to know what
exactly
information is talking nonsense and what is real.
Yeah.
But at least you've got more than one website to go into and source to go into. And what I tend to find when I do research is that you pick up the maverick sites.
Mm-hmm.
Because they talk something totally different than what other people do.
Okay.
And that doesn't make sense. If someone really had this wonder cure, it will be adapted all over the world.
Yes.
So if it's really a wonder cure, then people know about it and it sells itself.
Mm.
But if it's this well-kept secret, then it's normally a well-kept secret because it's a focus bogus.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of way the conversation has really evolved, is from us knowing about it, now that we're aware of it, it's about how do we differentiate between the kinds of information that we have. And that's where the conversation is evolving too.
Right.
How to discern.
And what do you think have been some of the biggest milestones in OCD awareness?
Well, it's fascinating. So when I had my own concepts in my mind, and then I went to do some research on it. And what's fascinating is the biggest shift was medically.
Mm-hmm.
It was only in 1950 that OCD was recognized as a disorder.
Okay.
It's been investigated and looked at since the early 1800s. And like I said, it's been recorded in sort of church conversations 1500s, 1600s already. But that, the moment it became a recognized disorder, mm-hmm. it allowed doctors to diagnose this. Because it was sort of standardized in terms of diagnosing it,
yeah.
you could start doing research on the treatment of it.
Okay.
So this is one interesting thing. This, you know, the biggest shift was not social, it was medical.
Okay.
And with that, the treatments started becoming researched,
mm-hmm.
and people started, you know, it started evolving and improving. And in a very short period of time, you know, cognitive behavior therapy, you know, was sort of developed, and it was shown to be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And with the new antidepressants that came with that as well,
mm-hmm.
that has really made big shifts in our thinking.
Okay.
So that for me was a very, very big shift. Now it was suddenly, now this is a specific defined disorder of the brain.
Yeah.
And what also medically happened is we had functional MRIs. That's a brain scan
mm-hmm.
that looks at the brain's functioning, mm-hmm. where it absorbs oxygen. And the theory is where it's more active, you know, you see the signs more.
Okay.
And that has shown us that there are very specific physical, emotional networks in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have OCD, they are affected in this in a certain way.
Wow.
And if you have other illnesses, they are affected in a different way.
Wow.
And that has sort of really sort of stopped the debate whether this is a behavioral problem or a social problem.
Oh, wow.
So this is really a brain problem.
So
and it affects the emotional networks.
You can actually see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The same with depression and with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And what they, you know, when you do research, is you find something in one area,
yeah.
then it needs to be replicated in another sort of setting,
uh-huh.
And then also in different cultures. And doesn't matter where they do these kind of functional MRIs, it's still research based, so it's not, you know, out in the open for us to use. But they found that the same patterns occur,
uh-huh.
and if they treat it, the patterns start becoming looking like people who don't have the illness.
Okay.
So that has really sort of made a huge shift in people's thinking, and brought it really down to, okay, but this is a neurological problem
mm-hmm.
that specifically affects the emotional networks of the brain.
Right.
And that's most of the mental illnesses that does that.
Mm.
And from there, you know, the sort of whole outflow has gone in terms of, but when we can identify when does this disorder start, we can identify how it looks, and that gives us roughly in, you know, between 1-3% of people in the world gets it. So it's not a common disorder, it's very uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
So it really gives us a parameters to work around and to talk around. And that's the nice thing for, you know, for the layperson that talks about it. They suddenly can define it. It's not just, it's a spiritual problem or a social problem. And then also for the person that suffers, they can go back and they can go, look, what is there? You know, how does it look in other people?
Mm-hmm.
How do other people experience this? What are they doing with their illness and managing it?
Right.
And that for me is a big part of the shift, I think, in society's thinking and acting to, or reacting to the illness.
Yeah, yeah. And continuing still on that same point, how else would you say that individuals who have had the lived experience of having or living with OCD, how have they helped to shift public understanding of the illness?
I don't know if you watched the series Monk.
No,
it's an American series.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. You know, it's about a detective who's got OCD.
Okay.
And it's very, very good. It shows a big part of the struggle that the person has with their compulsions and their rituals,
mm-hmm.
But also how they actually try and make a living despite that.
Okay.
So that for me is a nice one. And then more celebrities are talking about it. You know, Harrison Ford,
mm-hmm.
he's got OCD. David Beckham has got OCD.
Okay.
Leonardo DiCaprio has got OCD. So these guys are all people that are very successful in their career, despite having OCD. And for me, that is as part of that conversation that we need to have about having a chronic condition, yet being able to be successful in different spheres of our lives.
Right, right.
And when we as humans, when we have an example, that tends to give us hope, tends to help us sort of say, you know, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
Other people have been able to live with this and live beyond it. So I think that sharing helps a lot.
Yes, yes, for sure. And why is it still important to keep pushing for education and destigmatization, especially, you know, as we keep talking, having these conversations and spreading awareness? Why is it still important to keep doing that?
Well, stigma is one of the three top reasons why people don't go for treatment. You know, that lack of access to care is another one. But stigma is one of the three reasons. So if we keep on talking about it, and stigma is just a negative feeling that a society has about something.
Yeah.
And for me, it's that English saying that, you know, it's really sort of applicable here. Sort of unknown makes unloved. If we don't know about mental illness and we don't understand it, it makes it unloved, and then we start stigmatizing it. And this is the illness of young people, you know, so it starts early in life, and you know, new people are being born. There's young families that have to live with this and understand it. So the more widely available, that society's knowledge is about different disorders, the more we can tap into that. And the quicker those families can get help. And the interesting thing is that more than 50% of the world's population currently lives with a chronic condition. So chronic conditions are much more prevalent now than the acute conditions. Yet our conversation in society is still about short-term acute illnesses and not chronic conditions. And for me, that's important that we keep on highlighting the fact that chronic conditions are more common now than acute conditions. And their impact is very, very big, because with a chronic condition, the condition starts developing a relationship with every aspect of the person's life. So shifting that becomes more difficult, and the impact is also greater over time. So the more we can talk, the more we destigmatize, and the more we can sort of educate people on the concept of a brain illness that affects emotions, the more people will reach out, help and support each other, and not be so judgmental about it, but also and not so scared. And then they can support each other and really enjoy it. Well, I don't know, but, you know, enjoying it is not, it's not the right word for bongi.
But know how I get what you enjoy life.
Enjoy life despite a struggle.
I hear you. And what are some practical ways that all of us can contribute to ongoing awareness?
Well, for me, the, you know, I've said it before, it's in developing words in our own languages for illnesses. Because then we understand the illness better. We've thought about it, and it helps us describe that in our cultures. That helps. Because then we own it. We've named it. We own it. And we understand it. And then we can work with it. And then I think people can really just talk more about normality. You know, this whole thing, I'm OCD, when actually I just enjoy being neat and tidy, and I feel in control of myself and my environment, you know, if everything is neat. That's okay. It's normal. Talk like it's normal. And stop using pathology as an excuse for to control other people and not to want to change. it's a worldwide thing at the moment. Everybody wants to label everything.
Yes,
we want to describe it, label, and we want to make it into a pathology. And yeah, life isn't just about illness and disorders and things.
Mm-hmm.
We are quirky as a being. So just enjoy the quirkiness as a being.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just trying to put a label on it. I think it's, you know, it really makes us, it stops us from thinking once we've labeled something in a way, especially if it's normal. And also it excuses us from taking responsibility for our behavior. Because I've got a disorder. When the actual fact is, you know, having a disorder places a huge burden on you, responsibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we talk about it and we talk to people that have got a mental illness, it's to be respectful and to try and live out that grace and love towards each other in terms of understanding and living with it.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, the more chronic conditions there are, the more we have to learn to adapt and work with each other with those chronic conditions. Because human beings, you know, are important. So we can't ignore them. We can't replace them with machines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They are there. And we,
exactly. You know,
the better we make life for each other, the better quality of life we have and the less ill we become.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, life is better.
Mm. Well, thank you so much.
And for people who,
go ahead.
So just one last thing. You know, people who are suffering, just go on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Just type in OCD. You know, you get between 10 and 15 different websites on one page.
Mm.
And, you know, go and read up. Go and look at it. If you're curious about it, read up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty about it. And then over time, you sift through the information to see what is good and what's not good. It's like a biblical principle, you know.
Yeah.
Someone can be a prophet, but you test the prophecy.
Exactly.
Over time, was that prophet, you know, was it a true prophet or not? And it's the same with information. Test the information with time.
Well, beautiful. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. But before I let you go, this is our last conversation on this subject. Anything that we might have missed, anything that you'd like to emphasize that maybe we touched on that you just want to make sure that we remember as we move forward?
Yeah, I was thinking this morning, for me, the biggest thing is that the fact that the thoughts and the actions does not bring pleasure. And it creates anxiety and distress. It's very important to remember that, because that's one of the key things to differentiate between normality and disorder or illness. So people keep that in mind.
That's been a big one. That was a big lesson for me. I did not know that those intrusive thoughts don't actually bring any kind of pleasure. It's not something that they want to do and they're fighting against it. But it's something that it does not actually bring them any kind of pleasure anyway. So it must, yeah, thank you so much for that information. And thank you for coming through this entire month and educating us on the subject of OCD. It's been
You're very welcome.
And it's been quite insightful. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Jerry Bezuidenhout from the Vista Clinic. God bless you.
Thank you to you too.
Are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.